I call today's sermon a lesson in wisdom. A lesson in wisdom. It starts here in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 9. And I'm going to read from beginning of verse 13. As the writer here says, also this I came to see as wisdom under the sun, and it impressed me. It impressed me. Now, the King James Version says, and it was great to me. The New English Translation says, this is what I also have observed about wisdom on earth, and it is a great burden to me. The idea is it impressed me. It was very heavy. You know, you can get something that weighs on your mind. You see this situation, and it begins to impress you. It comes down on you. It's weighty. It weighs on your mind. And he describes it now in verse 14. There was a small city with few men in it. Let me read that in the Christian, the complete Jewish Bible. There was a small town with few people in it, and a great king came to attack it. He surrounded it and built massive siege works against it. So now I want you to see the description here. You got this small town. It has very few people. You have this powerful king. He's a great king, the Bible says. He calls him great. He's a great king. He came and he surrounded. Now he's attacking this city, surrounded it, and he constructed large, powerful bulwarks, siege works against it. I mean, the thing is overwhelming. A small town, very few people, a great king with powerful forces. I mean, goodness, you're going to say, well, you know, there's no way that people can survive. Who can win here? The odds are incredible. Huge odds here for the king and very small odds for this small town with very few people. Let me read that in the New International Version. There was once a small city with only a few people in it, and a powerful king came against it, surrounded it. He comes against it, surrounded it, built huge siege works against it. You can't get out. You can't get out of the city. They're surrounded. How are they going to win? Now, the verbs in the Hebrew are past action verbs. And many times they can be taken as a description of a hypothetical situation rather than the actual situation. So, the Septuagint version, which is a Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint version uses the subjunctive text, a subjunctive tone. So he would say something like this: suppose there was a little city and a few men lived in it, and there should come against it a great king and surround it and build great siege works. In other words, suppose it happened. Suppose this happened. And suppose in it there was this wise man. Okay, we'll come to the next verse now. Next verse. So you have these powerful words. The king is great. The king is powerful. His siege works are great. And against the few, the little and the small town. So let's go to verse 15. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 15. But there was found. Now, I'm going to take it that there was found in it a poor wise man. A poor wise man. And he, this poor wise man, delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. Ecclesiastes in the New English Translation, however, a poor but wise man lived in the city, and he could have delivered the city by his wisdom. Because they're using the subjunctive tone. In New International, now there was lived in that city a man poor but wise, and he saved the city by his wisdom. Now, in actual fact, there is a true story that happened in the Middle Ages in Europe. And you know, I don't know if you've traveled in Europe at all. You see these castles that they have, and you see where they build some of these castles. They're always up on a hill. They're always surrounding, you know, and they have a wall to the castle all surrounding it, you know. And because in that day you didn't have airplanes, you know, you had to come in on horses or donkeys or whatever, or on foot. And when you have to run up a hill and attack somebody who's up on a wall above you and they're shooting arrows and throwing stones, they got the advantage of gravity. You're coming up having to struggle to get up there, and they're throwing things down at you. They hit you, you know. So the fortresses were pretty much. So one of the ways you did in this particular story, in this particular case, and it's a true story, the queen of one of these city states was attacking this other town, this other fortress. Now the people had been gone and down, they had put a siege around it. All of her troops surrounded it. No food could come in or go out, no water could come in or go out. They're just going to surround it and starve them out. Now they've been out. Now meanwhile, the queen had other areas where she was, you know, she needed her army, so she didn't have all the time in the world. She's just hoping to starve them out. Her army was saying, yeah, we can starve them out here, but the queen is fighting in another front. Would like to have those soldiers and wanted to give, you know, hopefully that they will starve them out soon. Well, the people who are under attack in the fortress had now come down to their last ox. They had eaten most of the animals. They now had one last ox and just a few, you know, a little bit more, a sack of grain, and that's it. They were done. And in a bold and incredibly wise move, they did this. They cooked the ox. They stuffed it with all this grain. They had two or three men come up, and they heaved that ox over the wall, hitting down the hill, and the ox rolled down the hill to the plain where all these soldiers were. And they see this roasted ox stuffed with all this grain, and they looked at it, and the captain down there says, "Let's go. Were needed elsewhere," and they turned around and they left. An incredibly wise move, contrary to the way most people would have done it. You would have said, "We're down to our last ox. We're going to portion just a little bit for everybody. Let's keep the." They threw the rest of their food away to the soldiers below. But what it did was shock them. In other words, they got enough food. They're going to lie. They're going to be here forever. They've got so much food, they can throw us one. Let's go. We'll never starve them out. Not in time. We're needed elsewhere. So the queen pulled all her troops out, and off they went. And that move actually saved that fortress from starvation. Yes, sometimes a person with good wisdom, understanding, perspicacity, understanding, can achieve something that most people can't do. So here's what he did. There was in that city a poor wise man, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet nobody remembered him. And so, verse 16. So I said, wisdom is better than strength. I concluded this. Wisdom, obviously, is better than strength. I mean, all the strength was on the side of the king. All the power on the siege was on the side of the king. All this army on the side of the king. All this little city had was a small few people with one very wise man. And so the observer here, the writer here, is saying, you know, that he delivered him. Therefore, I conclude that wisdom is better than strength. That's my conclusion. But then he makes another conclusion. But the wisdom of a poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. person who is a poor man, he is despised. A little later on, you drop down to verse 18, he makes this conclusion too. Wisdom is better than weapons of war. Yeah, wisdom is better than weapons of war. Wisdom is better than strength. Wisdom is better than strength. It's better than weapons of war, but a poor man's wisdom is despised. Nobody remembered him. He went along and said, you know, hey, I did it. Get out of here. You didn't do it. A poor man's wisdom is despised. Well, why is that? Why would that be that a poor man's wisdom is despised? Well, one of the things we have a clue here in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 24. Let me read that in the complete Jewish Bible. It goes like this. The crown of the wise is their riches. But the folly of fools is just that, folly. Let me read it in the Christian Standard Bible. The crown of the wise is their wealth, but the foolishness of fools produces foolishness. All the foolishness of a fool does is produce more foolishness. But one of the crowns of the wise is wealth. It's a crown. Now, can you be wise without wealth? Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course you can. If you walked along the street and you saw homeless people, and maybe you walked along the Bowery, like in New York, or some areas here where you have the areas where drunkards and people on drugs, you know, kind of lie down on the street and there. If you walked along there, do you think, if you ask someone, do you think that some of those people have wisdom? It's possible, yeah. They have pretty good wisdom. But you probably won't go there to seek it. You probably won't stop and say, could you tell me, I'm thinking of doing this. What would you advise? You're probably not going to do it. Why? Because a poor man's wisdom is despised. Go to the barber who's bald and he's trying to sell you a thing that will grow hair. You think you'll buy it? Probably not. Why? Because he lacks credibility, believability. He lacks it. And so a poor wise man lacks credibility, does he not? That's what he lacks. He doesn't have the credibility for it. So the crown of the wise, one of the things, and you know that the scam, there was these young men, they started, and I've forgotten the name of the organization, but it was a scam organization. And the man who ran it made every one of these men, these young men, they were supposed to be doing investments and all that. They all had to dress impeccably. Impeccably. They had to dress in absolute blue suits. And you know, when IBM started, they called themselves the Blue Suit Organization. You could not work there without a blue suit. Why? Blue has to do with sincerity and all that, blah, 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 you know. And so they wanted the highest form of credibility. You had to look successful. So in this scam organization, these young men all drove new cars. They all dressed in absolutely fabulous suits. And why? Because they wanted the highest form of credibility. Now, does dressing in a good suit give you any more wisdom than dressing in an old suit or having jeans on? Now, if I came up here in jeans, would I not be the same person? Of course I would. If I came here in a t-shirt, would I not be the same person? Could I not give you this same sermon or other sermons in the same way? Of course I could. Then why would I dress in a suit? Why would I have a tie on? Well, several reasons. First of all, we're in a church service. I want to honor God, and I want to, you know, but I also want to have credibility. I want to have credibility with the audience. I want them to feel that what I'm saying, I don't want it to get in the way of credibility. You see, you don't want something getting in the way of your credibility. Yes, A person in a t-shirt and jeans probably can be just as wise as anybody else, can be just as knowledgeable as anybody else. But are you going to go down to the homeless row and look for wisdom and consult some of them as to how you're going to invest or what you're going to do about your health or what you're going to do about something? Is that what you're going to do? Is that where you're going to go? Probably not. If you've ever been to attorney's offices are usually very nice, especially the big law firms. They've got all this beautiful upholstery, appointments, and all the other things, you know, the beautiful woods and the cabinets and the bookshelves. And I mean, they look like you're going in, you're going to get counsel and advice, and you want to know, I've got somebody behind me that's substantial. They have credibility. Why is a poor man's wisdom despised? It lacks credibility. He delivered the city. Nobody remembered him. Nobody heard him again. Nobody cared about him. And this weighed heavy here on this writer of Ecclesiastes, Solomon. Weighed heavily on him. It's like, why is that? You could see that. You could see what he's talking about. There was found there in verse 15, a poor wise man. He delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered the poor wise man. So I said, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of a poor man is despised. His wisdom is despised and his words are not heeded. Go to a poor wise man and see if you will listen. Go down to there. There's probably wisdom there. I'm reminded of the story, you know, remember this old story about the guy who had a flat tire. He's right next to a riverbed, he's right in a deep river running, and his flat tire is on the side of the road next to the river, right? You know, so he gets out and he jacks up the car. He first unloosens the bolts, and then he jacks up the car and he's pulling off the thing, and he puts the bolts for his spare tire, puts the bolts wheel covers, you know, like that cap, and he popped that, put them in the cap, and he's pulling the water, and he knocks the cap over, you know, the hubcap, and it knocks the bolts, and they fall down into the river, and the river is deep, right close to the edge, and it's dark, and he can't find the bolts, and now they're gone, and he's like paused. Now, next door to him, there's a mental institution right across the way. And all these people looking out the gate and, you know, on the fence, and they're watching this guy with his thing. He's in a dilemma. He does not know how he's going to get his tire back on here. So one of the guys yells out, "Hey, why don't you just take one bolt off of each, one nut off of each of the other tires and put it on that tire, and it'll last you till you can get in town and get some more new nuts for your tires." Guy said, "Boy, that's a good idea." So he does it, of course. And then he looks at it and he says, "You know, here I thought you people in there were crazy." And they said, "Well, we are, but we're not stupid." So again, you probably won't go to a mental institution, you know, to get some wisdom. So, you know, they had some sagacity there, you know, and they could say the part. But again, that's not where you're going to go. Why? Because those people have low credibility, do they not? A poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heeded. And therefore, nobody remembered him. A great feat like that. He saved the city. He couldn't get any credit for it. And then we have this statement. The words of the wise are heard in quietness. They're heard in quietness, and they are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Verse 17. Let me read that in the New English Translation. The words of the wise are heard in quiet, more than the shouting of a ruler is heard among fools. Let me read that in the New International Version. All these, you know, the Hebrew is, you know, can be translated different ways here. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of a ruler of fools. And the New Jerusalem Bible says this: the calm words of the wise make themselves heard above the shouts of someone commanding an army of fools. And so, you know, people, they want to get out there and they're yelling and screaming. A wise person will just sit there in a calm way, talk to you. This is how I think you ought to do it. And those words are, and by the way, I tell people this for parents. Parents, stop the shouting. Stop the shouting, screaming over every little thing. I told you not to do that. Now you're ringing me. Just, if you want your kid to listen to you, talk to them. Lower your voice. Speak to them very calmly. Okay, now what are we going to do about this? Now here you lost your phone. What are we going to say? What are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this? You lost your homework. You don't know what to do with. But what can we do? But see, we tend to go off, and after a while, you know what kids do? They tune you out. They shut down the volume. Nope, I don't hear you anymore. You can go on and on and on and on, and then they walk away. Yeah, they don't have anything. So if you want your kids, you want to be heard, lower your voice, be a little calmer. Heard in wisdom. The words of the wise heard in quietness are better. They're better. Think about David, King David's last words in 2 Samuel chapter 23, beginning in verse 1. Here are David's last words. So these are the last words of David. 2 Samuel 23, beginning of verse 1. The oracle of David, the son of Jesse, the oracle of the man exalted by the Most High, the man anointed by the God of Jacob, Israel's singer of songs, sweet psalmist, the sweet psalmist of Israel. He's the singer of songs. Verse 2, the Spirit of the Lord of the Eternal spoke through me. His word was on my tongue. The God of Israel spoke. The rock of Israel said to me, when one rules, now here's what he knew. This is what God said to him. When one rules over men in righteousness, when he rules in the fear of God, he is like a light of morning at sunrise on a cloudless morning. Like the brightness after rain that brings the grass from the earth. When a ruler rules over men in a righteous way, he brings a light. It's just bright. Everything is bright about it. It's wonderful. It's, you know how these beautiful days, like we have expecting a wonderful day today and tomorrow and the next day. They just bring joy to you. You get up and you see the brightness and it sparkles. And then David said, is not my house right with God? Has he not made with me an everlasting covenant, arranged and secured in every part? Will he not bring to fruition my salvation and grant me my every desire? But evil men are all to be cast aside, like thorns which are not gathered with the hand. Whoever touches thorns uses a tool of iron or the shaft of a spear. They are burned where they lie. You don't pick up thorns, you know. You're going to grab the thorns, you have to get a rake or something, you know. You don't want to grab them with your hand because you get it all pinched. And so people don't want to touch thorns with their hands. Was Jesus a person who was quiet, who spoke in quiet? Yes, he was. If you turn to Matthew chapter 12, you'll see early on he's talking about the Sabbath day and the Jews were questioning about the exceptions of the Sabbath. And he gave exceptions for the Sabbath. You know, is it right to do good? Is it right to heal? Is it right to do this? And he says, it's right to do good. Well, then they began to plot against him. The Jews then said, you know, let's get rid of this guy. Let's do something against him. And verse 15, I'm beginning in verse 15 now, Matthew 12, verse 15. But Jesus, aware of this, meaning aware of their plotting against him, withdrew from there. And many followed him, and he healed them all. And he warned them not to make him known. Don't tell people about me. In order that what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled. And here's what Isaiah the prophet said about Jesus, and Jesus is fulfilling this prophecy. Matthew's telling us this. Matthew, so this is verse 18 now, quoting from Isaiah. "Behold my servant, whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles, to the nations. He will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets." He's not a rabble-rouser. He's not a person that's out there causing riots. He's not shouting and demonstrating. He's not doing that. "A battered reed he will not break off, and a smoldering wick he will not put out, until he leads justice to victory. And in his name the Gentiles will hope." That's all the way through to verse 21. So we see here a wonderful situation. You know, words in quiet. Words in quiet. Jesus will not quarrel. He's not going to cry out. Now, the irony of all this is that on the day of the time of the crucifixion, you know, the time when they crucified, and Pilate didn't want to, he did not want to kill Jesus. He did not. You know, his wife warned him, "This don't have anything to do with this righteous man." And so Pilate thought, here's a way I can get this man Jesus out, because Jesus is not giving Pilate any help. Pilate says, well, what are these? I mean, what, tell me something. Say something in your own behalf. And Jesus wouldn't answer. Wouldn't answer. Now, if Jesus had just said, "You know, Pilate, these people are just jealous of me. I'm not trying to do anything. I'm not against you. I'm not against Rome. But these people are trying to make up things on me. They're jealous of me because I'm teaching the truth of the scriptures and they have perverted it. And because of the way I'm teaching the truth of it, they're all upset and they're accusing me of all kinds of things. And none of it's true. And you can't get anybody to verify it." Now, he had done that. And Pilate was, okay. "Hey, you guys, this guy is not guilty. I'm letting him loose and you're not guilty." But Jesus doesn't say anything. He won't answer. He won't answer. He won't answer. Finally, Pilate says, "I know how to do it. We've got another guy over here and Jesus over here. I'll just contrast this guy, Jesus. He's a nice person. He's tall. He's mild. He's, you know. But with this rabble-rouser, insurrectionist, and robber and thief. This guy's robbed his own people. Now he's trying to overthrow the government. And he's out here yelling and screaming in the streets. I'll ask them which one they want to release." And he was confident the Jews would say, you know, "Well, release Jesus, you know." But the Pharisees and the Sadducees stirred up the people and said, "What do you want? Do you want me to release to you Jesus, King of the Jews, or Barabbas, this insurrectionist?" And they said, "Release Barabbas." I think Pilate was stunned. He was stunned. And he ended up washing his hands. "Well, you know, I'm not guilty here. You know, I'm washed." And they said, "His blood, let his blood be on us and on our children." And so he released Barabbas. Wisdom has its place, but it has to have credibility. So wisdom, verse 18, he concludes in Ecclesiastes 9, "Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good." Now that doesn't really, you know, it's hard to understand that. One sinner. Let me read that in the New International Version. "Wisdom makes one wise person, more powerful." Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to read that in this other. I've got to read verse 18. Wisdom, one sinner, meaning one incompetent person, destroys much good. One person that doesn't do the right thing. But if I turn over to Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 19, dropping down to verse 19, "Wisdom strengthens a wise man." Listen to this phrase. "Wisdom strengthens a wise man more than 10 rulers that are in a city." Let me read that in the New English Translation. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 19. Wisdom gives a wise person more protection than 10 rulers in a city. That's a difficult Hebrew to translate accurately. It's left up to a lot of interpretation. So let me read it in this New International Version. Wisdom makes one wise person more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. Wisdom makes you powerful. If you have an insight in human nature, if you have wisdom and you know how to apply the knowledge you have, it is an enormous power. Never shrink from understanding. That's why the Proverbs tell you seek wisdom. Above everything else, above wealth, above rubies, about everything, seek wisdom. Get wisdom. It's more precious than all the other things that you would want in this life, wisdom. But remember, a poor man's wisdom, you have to have credibility. A poor man's wisdom is despised. There's a lesson in wisdom. It's right in your Bible.